This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Saudi Arabia's ongoing war against its impoverished neighbor, Yemen, is once more in the news. At least 14 children were killed on Saturday when the Saudis bombed two schools in Sada. Saudi authorities denied the attack, saying it had targeted a military training camp instead. In fact, a spokesperson told CNN that the report simply confirms that Yemen's Houthi rebels recruit and train children. And just on Monday, it is now being reported that a Doctors Without Borders hospital has also been hit, killing an untold number of people. Yemen's children have been particularly hard hit, as a recent United Nations report revealed. There were six times more deaths of Yemeni children in 2015 than in the year before, and nearly all were the result of Saudi bombs and attacks. Saudi Arabia is counting the United States as its most important military advisor in that war. It's also, of course, the U.S.'s most loyal weapons buyer. My guest is Gareth Porter. He's an investigative journalist specializing in U.S. foreign policy. He's also the author of Manufactured Crisis, The Untold Story of the Iran Nuclear Scare. Welcome to the program, Gareth.
Hello again, Sonali. Good to be back on your program.
Thanks so much for joining us. Let's talk first specifically about Yemen, these latest attacks. The Saudis are basically denying that these schools were hit. Just literally within hours of us recording this interview, news is now emerging of the UBS hospital run by Doctors Without Borders in northern Yemen also being hit. This seems as though it's fairly typical, but we don't hear much about it in the Western media, do we?
Well, this is really the problem with this Saudi coalition war in Yemen, that it is really the worst, the most obviously unjust criminal war that the United States is deeply involved in, but which the U.S. government is refusing to acknowledge any responsibility for. So it's really an issue that demands much more scrutiny and much more active opposition from the public. And I think the key thing that people need to understand is that two points that I would make. One, that the Saudi air offensive has been carried out so unprofessionally, in such a cowardly manner. They fly so high above the earth that it's impossible, technically impossible, for them to possibly hit a military target. They know they're doing area bombing. Even if there is a military target that they've picked out, they know it's area bombing. And in fact, the Saudi government has officially declared early in the war, in the very beginning of the war, that they had made the entire governorate of Sada'a, which is, of course, the area that is populated by the Houthi rebels primarily. They have made that entire governorate a military target, which, of course, is a massive violation of humanitarian law, the laws of war. So this is the way the war is being fought, and the United States has known this all along, and they have simply refused to do anything about it. So this poses a very, very serious, very critical issue in U.S. Foreign policy.
So actually, let's specifically talk about the fact that what the U.S.'s role is. The U.S. supplies weapons to the Saudis. The U.S. provides political cover for the Saudis through its friendship, if you will, although that friendship has been a little bit more strained under President Obama. But what role is it playing specifically in the Saudi war against Yemen, other than providing weapons and sort of political support?
Right. Well, I think the first thing that people need to know is that, as revealed by a brand new, very important article by Andrew Coburn, published in Harper's Magazine, he has gotten, not officially, but unofficially from a source within the Obama administration, the acknowledgement that what happened was that President Obama felt that he needed Saudi acquiescence, if not support, for his nuclear deal with Iran. And that in order to get that, in order to basically get the Saudis to be quiet about it, he simply threw them this enormous bone, if you will, of simply supporting regardless of what happened, to support the war that the Saudis were waging in Yemen. And so therefore, the United States government, the Obama administration, has felt committed to the Saudis. And now, regardless of what happens, it cannot back out. That's its position privately. So it is essentially the result of this political bone thrown to the Saudis in return for their acquiescence in the Iran nuclear deal. But what the United States has been doing from the beginning is to provide not only the weapons, but the refueling support, which is even more crucial to the Saudi war in Yemen. They cannot carry out a single operation, a single flight of bombers going over Yemen without refueling by the U.S. Air Force.
So the U.S. is providing active military support and, in effect, has sacrificed the Yemenis for a détente with Iran?
Absolutely. That at least is the way it was seen or justified by the Obama administration. But precisely so, that the United States has provided the absolutely necessary military support, the logistical support, not just repairing these aircraft, which of course the Saudis absolutely have to have done in order to carry out this war, not only providing the original weapons, but then resupplying them in the middle of the war when they were running out, but also refueling every single flight that is carried out by the bombing operations, the bombing sorties carried out by the Saudis.
Now, Gareth, the justification that the Saudis are giving, particularly for the weekend attack on the schools, is that, well, this simply proves that Houthi rebels are training Yemeni children, and so this is a justifiable target. But other human rights organizations are saying these were clearly schools that children were attending. I mentioned the UN report in May that showed children's fatalities had increased sixfold in 2015, not even, counting this year, but 2015 compared to the year before, almost all primarily as a result of Saudi bombs. Are children the worst victims in Yemen? And if you actually look for images of Yemeni children, not only it seems are they victims of bombs, but also mass starvation?
Right. I mean, this is clearly a war waged by the Saudis to punish the Yemenis, to force them into submission as a people, rather than in any sort of conventional military sense to defeat them, because they can't be defeated militarily. And in this sense, it is certainly ranks among the most odious of wars in my lifetime. And by the way, the UN people who are involved in Yemen, who have visited Yemen and who have kept track of the humanitarian crisis there, say that Yemen has suffered the degree of humanitarian crisis that in 1 year that the Syrians have suffered in 5 years. So it is a
wow.
much more intensified war in that sense than even the war in Syria, which is a terrible war without any question.
Right. In fact, Syria is considered the worst war that is currently happening. Now, on the issue of the MSF hospital that was just bombed, the Abs hospital, and of course, it's amazing how many Doctors Without Borders hospitals are targeted in theaters of war that the U.S. is involved in, if you look at places like Afghanistan and even Syria. But one of the things that has come out so far, and this is just still an unfolding story, we don't even know how many people are dead. One of the notes that has come out is that rescuers were reluctant to go in to bring people out to rescue patients and staff and doctors because they were worried about a second round of strikes that would target rescue efforts. Why would they be so worried about this?
Well, of course, this is a tactic, if you will, a military tactic, which is very familiar to people who followed wars in the Middle East, including the U.S. drone war in Pakistan and elsewhere, where the United States also pursued the same kind of tactic, knowing that after a drone strike on a particular target, that there would be rescuers and families coming to the site. They targeted again knowing that they would hit the rescuers, and that has been well documented. So this is a familiar but extremely odious practice that, again, is one of the most serious violations, one of the most heinous violations of the laws of war that one can imagine.
I mean, essentially, these classify as war crimes.
Absolutely. The Human Rights Watch itself has called the practices of the Saudi coalition air war in Yemen war crimes, or suggested that these certainly needs to be investigated as war crimes. There is plenty of evidence that this is without doubt a violation of the laws of war and should be condemned by every civilized nation in the world as such.
And let's also just sort of put the Saudi war on Yemen into geographic and economic context. So these are two Gulf Arab nations, the wealthiest Gulf Arab nation that sits just north of the most impoverished Gulf Arab nation, that's Yemen, and is, you know, just raining its military might onto this tiny country, the poorest country in the Arab world. Let's talk, Gareth, about, broadly speaking, the fact that this is the foreign policy of the United States under a liberal democratic administration. Obama, the reluctant warrior, has overseen such horrific violence. What could we expect under a Clinton presidency? Polls are showing that it's much more likely that she will prevail in November than Trump. It has been noted even by the New York Times magazine to be far more hawkish than even Obama.
Well, this is without any question the most likely outcome of a Clinton administration is going to be far more war, far more intensive war than we've seen under Obama. And particularly, of course, this is focused on the question of U.S. policy towards Syria. This is the one place where Obama has, in fact, resisted pressure from his own administration, from Secretary of State John Kerry, particularly, but also people in the Pentagon and the CIA, to wage war. To start a new war against the Assad regime, which very easily would turn into or could turn into a war for regime change, although that was not the initial intention in 2013, excuse me, in 2013, when the issue arose over the question of Obama's red line over chemical weapons use in Syria. And he thought he was going to begin that war and then backed off at the last moment, almost the 11th hour, 59th minute. But Hillary Clinton has continued to say that that was a mistake, that she would have gone ahead with the use of standoff weapons to punish the Assad regime and to put pressure on the Assad regime. And since then, and particularly in the last few weeks, the last couple of months, we have seen evidence that serious figures who are senior advisors to Hillary Clinton have been making public their own recommendations for what the next president of the United States should do about Syria. And those recommendations include a new war that would involve standoff weapons, particularly threatening to retaliate against any use of force against one of the armed opposition groups that the United States CIA has been supporting. And of course, this is inevitable that there's going to be some retaliation, some airstrikes that are going to hit one of the CIA-supported groups in the future, as long as they are allied with and fight alongside or in coordination with al-Nusra Front, or what is it was al-Nusra Front, is now rebranded. So this is a recommendation that is bound to get the United States into a new war with Assad, with the Assad regime, but also, even more importantly and more dangerously, with the Russians. And incidentally, the Center for New American Security, which is one of the outfits led by a senior advisor to Hillary Clinton, who has been named as one of the most likely candidates to become Secretary of Defense under Clinton. The report of the CNAS actually acknowledges that this would carry a high risk of war with Russia. So it is incredible that Clinton's own advisors would call for an option which would risk the United States going to war with Russia in Syria.
Now, under President Obama, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have not managed to wrap up. Afghanistan, particularly the longest war the U.S. has ever waged, you know, which began in 2001, despite what some of Trump's advisors might reimagine. These two wars continue. They are likely to continue under Clinton, too, right?
Well, again, there's no doubt that Clinton is more hawkish on U.S. military involvement in places like Iraq and Afghanistan than Obama was, or has been up to now. When she was Secretary of State, she was the primary ally of those people in the Pentagon and in the armed services who were pushing for the U.S. commitment of much higher levels of troops to Afghanistan in 2009 and 2010. And in fact, she was really an indispensable political ally of those people who wanted to escalate U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan. It's very clear, for example, from Secretary Gates' memoirs that she was a very important aspect of the political pressure on Obama to go ahead with that request for nearly 40,000 U.S. troops in addition to what were already there. Because she was the Secretary of State, and the unwritten rule for a president is that you cannot refuse to do something about a proposed use of military force that is supported by both your Secretary of Defense and your Secretary of State. Now, I'm not supporting that rule by any means, but this is something that has come up over and over again in one administration after another. So she was a vital part of the political consideration that went into that escalation by President Obama.
Well, Gareth Porter, I want to thank you so much for sharing your insights with us on these issues. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali.
Gareth Porter is an investigative journalist specializing in U.S. foreign policy, and one of his books is called Manufactured Crisis, The Untold Story of the Iran Nuclear Scare. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.